We'll take some questions from the audience, if you have any out there.
Absolutely.
Admiral Callahan, is this your first time at Oshkosh?
It is. I'm a rookie. Big time.
Another one. Boy, the whole Snowbirds team was here. They'd never been here before.
It's almost embarrassing, I, to be honest with you. I've been looking at Oshkosh for my 34-year, actually longer than that, aviation career, and always wanted to be here. But it always seemed like I had the duty. Unlike these guys down here in the front, somebody else is standing on the watch at the station now, so you guys can go to Oshkosh. I never had that chance, but I'm so happy to be here.
You have over 30 years of experience as an aviator, both civilian and military, both fixed wing and rotary wing.
That's correct.
Is there one you prefer?
Oh boy, if I say something, I'll make one side or the other pout right now.
So which ones are the rotary wing guys?
Rotary wing guys, raise your hands. Come on. There we go.
fixed wings.
Fixed wingers. Yeah.
Okay,
what ultimately happens is that, you know, if I lean towards one or the other, the one side will pout. Oh, the Admiral doesn't like fixed wing, or he doesn't. I loved both of them. I flew helicopters most of my career, so you can guess where most of my time went. And I truly enjoyed the fixed wing side too. It's just, you know, the good thing about Coast Guard aviation as a pilot, if you do a career in a Coast Guard, you're going to fly both. By the time you're done, you're going to fly fixed wing and rotary wing. You probably fly, like some of these guys here, have flown more than two or three different airframes in their career. So.
Excellent. Where are the different places you've been stationed during your career?
So I've been fortunate. Started out in New Orleans, Louisiana, Port Angeles, Washington, Kodiak, Alaska, which was a real hardening tour for me. Savannah, Georgia, Mobile, Alabama, Mobile, Alabama twice, and New Orleans twice. So a lot of Gulf Coast time. Spent some time as a chief of staff up here in the Great Lakes region. I wasn't an aviator at the time, but was the second in command of the 9-state Great Lakes region. So, my aviation career is pretty much hit all the coasts. So Savannah, Georgia, places like that.
Well, I was surprised the 8th District. You're basically based in New Orleans, but it goes all the way up to Minneapolis. That's a large swath of the country that's under your command.
Yeah, it's a monster district. It's 26 states, so we cover the Outer Continental Shelf and the Gulf of Mexico, all the Gulf of Mexico, the Gulf states from Texas over to most of Florida, part of Florida, and then all the way inland, the heartland of the United States. And we do that because the river system, that 10,000-mile highway, Mississippi River and all the tributaries that are involved there. So it's a big area. Some of the states are like North Dakota, so not a lot of Coast Guard going on there. But one of our largest and busiest districts, and it's a lot of fun for me.
And when you think of what we see on TV, reality TV, it's the rescues, the Deadliest Catch, the fishing shows, things like that. But we had talked earlier about actually the harbor security and the amount of material and goods that moves through our waterway system throughout the country. And that really is your charge, the Coast Guard's charge, to keep that safe and moving.
Absolutely. You know, the waterways of America and the ports of America, when you look at the amount of the economic engine that they produce for our country, quite frankly, there is no United States without that trade. Just the inland river system alone is a $400 billion a year annual economic enterprise for our country. That's first order effects. That doesn't include second and third order effects. That's just an example of why port security and maritime security is important to us, and safety too. In this just-in-time economy, it's not a matter of economic security, it's a matter of national security when you talk about our ports and our waterways.
Admiral, can you discuss the history of the orange and white color scheme and how that was selected?
Well, that's a good question. I can't give you the accurate answer to that. I just know that there was a time frame, and it was, I believe, I'm looking at my aviation, chief of aviation on the ice, it's probably around the early 60s when we shifted to white and orange, international orange, as our as the paint scheme on our aircraft. I've seen over my years actually flying, some of the services have tested that yellow color again. I remember when I was going through Pensacola, some of the T-34s were painted all yellow there because they wanted to test their visibility, in an air traffic control situation. But for us, the importance of international orange and the visibility of our helicopters, not just to other aircraft and folks and that kind of thing, not from an aviation perspective, from the perspective of those folks on the water. I think if you've seen our dolphins, not the retro scheme we've got there, it was mostly white and some orange. You've seen our Dolphin helicopters, they are all orange. They are nothing but orange. And that visibility of that helicopter has now become, in my opinion, probably the best paint scheme we have in the Coast Guard. Everybody knows when a Dolphin's in the area. Mm-hmm. They know that orange helicopter. After Katrina, they definitely know it. So,
do you work with drones?
Well, if you're talking about UAVs, yes, the Coast Guard is involved with UAVs within our department, and we partner with our CBP folks, Customs and Border Protection, and we have Coast Guard aviators who are flying predators, or I guess we call them guardians, don't we? That's the right name. I think it's guardians. So I don't know. In any event, we have our marinized version of those, and we partner with CBP to do that. We have Coast Guard sensor operators that are flying those aircraft too. Those UAVs. So we are in that age. We do see that technology as useful to us in the Coast Guard. We're pushing as hard as we can to use all types of UAVs. I know we're testing some on our cutter, smaller versions, but yes, absolutely, we fly them.
Thank you for all your service, and shout out to my nephews on the Berthoff in the Pacific.
Ooh. I'll trade places with them right now. Yeah. That's a great tour.
They have two helicopters, I think, or maybe three on their ship. What's it like landing on a ship that's rolling and pitching? Yeah. I assume they're mostly going out in storms or for a rescue at least.
Well, that's a great question. And, you know, for helicopter aviators, shipboard landings are in the Coast Guard are pretty important to us. Our cutters, many of them are flight deck equipped cutters. And those flight decks, though, by standards of other services like the Navy, are very small flight decks. So, yes, it's a very challenging part of our flying, but we train to do that. We deploy off our cutters. We deploy off other ships, we've deployed off of Navy ships, too. But what's it like landing on a cutter? I'd give you the cliche postage stamp thing. You know, it is small. The hand-eye coordination, with a helicopter and trying to, particularly if the deck motion is high, that's probably one of the most difficult challenges I've had flying, is trying to land on that deck and time it out, because you really have to try to land when that deck is level, and it's moving up and down and pitching and rolling. And there are limitations to how much we can accept, but it's really about training and timing, and that's what I've learned over the years. And I'm telling you, I probably couldn't do it now, but some of these guys that are sitting in the audience here in the flight suits are definitely trained to do that. And it's important for our mission to be able to deploy off a Coast Guard cutter. So it extends our legs, and that's what I did in the Bering Sea when I was stationed in Alaska. We deployed off of Coast Guard cutters in the Bering Sea. So very important to our mission.
Good evening. 20 years with the reserves on UH-1 and UH-60.
All right,
so
helicopter brother.
I'm partial to the UH-60.
Yes.
I'm curious as to the choice of the airframes that you're using and how you use them different. I mean, why a UH-60 and a Dolphin?
Well, so our aircraft are kind of divided up into, for our helicopters at least, divided up into, I don't know if the terminology we use is correct anymore, but it's short range recovery and then medium range recovery. So we don't have any real long-range recovery helicopters. That's when you're talking about the Nighthawks the Air Force flies, the CH-53s, those extremely long leg aerial refueling. We don't have those. But our H-60s have some pretty long legs. So the difference in the mission, the difference in the use of those aircraft, you see them scattered throughout the country, but we put our 60s where we think we're going to need those longer legs to reach out. Although I would tell you that the Dolphins that we fly, we've adapted in some areas. And my district's a good example, the Gulf of Mexico. As you may or may not know, but there's 30,000 people that work out in the Gulf of Mexico on any given day on oil platforms. And there's 5,000 of them out there. And some of them are out now as far as 200, 250 miles offshore. So what we've learned over time with the Dolphin is if we can't reach the case, we will call it lily padding or leapfrogging off of oil rigs. We'll land out, refuel, and continue the mission. Most of the time with fixed wing aircraft overhead to cover us. So we have extended our mission in our Dolphins that way. But we divide it up between short range and medium range. And the Dolphins, although this may change in the future, much to the H-60 guys' chagrin, but the Dolphins have always been our shipboard deployable aircraft. And we've used those primarily for shipboard deployments. Not to say the 60s can't deploy off certain ships, but we tend to use the Dolphins more. That might change. The Chief of Aviation Forces is sitting out there going, yep, it's going to change.
This has bothered me for 20 years. I live in Saginaw Bay, and I went to bed, and there this 6-foot square ice shanty had floated up in my deep on my beach.
Oh yeah,
ice fishermen don't care. The next morning, I woke up to the sound of blades, and there was a Coast Guard helicopter over my house. It came down about 100 feet away, didn't land, but hovered about 4 feet off the ground. Two guys with what looked like M16s jumped out, kicked the door in this thing, and both went in. And I wasn't hallucinating. What in the world were they doing? Yeah.
I don't know.
And they
know.
Left before I could turn on a light.
Yeah, I was
under attack.
I don't know how long ago that was, but
about 20 years.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not something we would typically do, particularly in the Great Lakes region, but having been up here and served up here, I wouldn't even venture a guess. It's just not something that I've ever seen. So
I can understand it in the thumb. Those people are strange. Yeah.